Global Radio.
Hello, hello, hello. This is Sherry Thompson, and we are here at Africa Global Radio. Our story, our growth, our future. This is the Black Our Story podcast, and we are live and in color. And I'm with a wonderful fine artist, Biko. You're here in the house, and we are so excited that you're coming to be with us and tell us a little bit about what you do, how you do it, and your story. How did you get here to Ghana? Because you know you're not here from Ghana now. You're from California.
Well, I think I want us to jog back that idea about me being a foreigner. Because my father is a Ghanaian.
Oh!
Yeah.
Some things I did not know.
Yeah. Me a Ghanani. Me papa a Ghanani.
So tell us your full name so that we know the Ghanaian root of it. Because sure. Biko, is Biko a Ghanaian name? No, I haven't heard it yet.
Well, Biko is of South African origin. I was named after Stephen Biko. Uh-huh. But I think in Nigeria, it also means please or I beg.
Oh, son.
Yeah. And in the Philippines, it's like a sweet rice dessert pudding.
Anyway, this is so exciting.
But my name is Biko Kwamina Tamaklo Hafar.
Wow.
So my grandmother is from Elmina.
Okay.
So we consider ourselves Fontes, but her father was an Ewe, so the last name is an Ewe last name.
This is a story. You know, your name does tell a story.
Yeah.
And mine is Sherianne Elizabeth Bernadette Donaldson Thompson. Yeah, I'm like American taxes. I got the long form and the short form. Sherry Thompson is fine. Even better is Mama Lou. Every poo deserves a loo. But we're not going to be talking about toilet sanitation today. We're going to be talking about your story and what you have to offer. What made you move from California to here? Or is it a back and forth thing? I hear you be traveling quite a bit. You're like my son with those frequent flyer miles.
Yeah, I have been coming here since I was an infant. My mother fell in love with Ghana in the mid-80s.
She fell in love with more than Ghana. She fell in love with your daddy.
Yeah. They met in Los Angeles. And my father came to the U.S. in the mid-60s.
Okay.
So during the turbulence of the 60s, he was present for that. And what was really interesting to me is that he really got a racial education. I mean, he got an Afrocentric education when he came to the U.S. Because in Ghana, the sense of the story of slavery, the story of our story.
Yeah. They weren't really teaching that here.
I think it's more of a diasporic spirit behind our story.
Right.
And I think Kwame Nkrumah and some of the great luminaries of Ghanaian history understood that there was a collective Black story. But you would have to be educated in that in
to
Ghana,
know,
otherwise,
to that,
yeah, to know that we're all connected.
Because it wasn't something that was being taught on the basic level of human involvement and engagement. Nobody knew about the enslavement of other Black people from this place, or was Cape Coast Castle not open to the public, or what was that? What was that like? What was that about?
I think that in the education system in that time, when we're talking about the, you know, my dad is living in Kumasi in the 50s.
So
the education system then, I think, reduced slavery and reduced it big time, right? So the idea of when slavery was abolished, it just came down to one line in his education. They knew that William Wilberforce, the British politician, was the one who abolished it. But, you know, slavery kept going in certain places, like I think it was abolished by the British. Look, I'm about to be incorrect about my history. But the point is this.
So that's okay.
But this is important.
It is.
The point is that in the European world, the British might have abolished it, but the Americans didn't.
Yes. Yeah.
Or the British might have abolished the slave trade, but that didn't mean they abolished slavery. Like, there's all types of little...
Something going on.
There's
continuation of what it is that they did, which was enslave a whole continent of people. And that was going on not only in America, but in Europe. And Europe was enslaving the whole continent. They came here to enslave countries that yeah. they had designated as countries. So that's a story. Are you painting that story? When you do your work, when you do your artistic work, do you tell this story?
You know, this is going to be a really, I'm going to be really open with you.
Good.
Here. Okay. Telling that story, telling the story about our history, our psychology,
yeah.
our heroism, our drama, that's a really important story for me to tell. I mean, I think that's part of what my work is to do. My art has expressed mostly through a abstract expressionist mode.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, so when you look at my art, I don't think you initially would think about history or psychology because I'm not using figurative images and motifs.
No, it's expressionism. Yeah. It's mm-hmm. it's coming from your heart, from your passion. And whatever you're doing on there has a message that communicates to different people in different ways.
Yeah. And so behind it is this is what I'm marinating on, though, you know.
I like that word, marinating, because yeah. it's almost like what we did when we look at birth. You know, it's a period of time mm-hmm. that we're in labor, and when the birth comes, it's a splash. You're here. You're there. But marinating, it's more of a thought process, and so it's not quite labor. It's actually thought. It's actually you're thinking, you're putting some seasonings on that. You're taking a look at, how you're thinking from a different perspective. That's how I marinate anyway.
Mm-hmm.
You might call it even meditation.
Yes.
Meditation before you actually do a work. You're in connection with the spirit of the universe, which is, for me, God. And so I take a look at, when I look at paintings, I look at how God is speaking to me through that piece of work. Tell us a little bit about what you try to do when you have your painting express what you are thinking.
Well, at any given time, what I'm thinking about is different, right? Everybody, if you ask them how they're feeling now compared to how you're feeling in an hour or tomorrow, you might say something different. So I try to be aware of what the intention is behind what I'm creating, because as an abstract mm-hmm. artist, I can just express anything that I'm feeling in the moment. But I like to think that the purpose of art is to help raise the vibration of the world.
Yes.
Or to help uplift frequency. People.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The rhythm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think so. I think when you look at a work of art and you're impressed by it, it's almost like a portal into something, a portal into beauty or some kind of wisdom. You know, there are artists that have that level of ability. And so if I can get my mind to be thinking about God or wisdom or even the problems of the country,
yeah.
what would it feel like to have a country that was resolved of all of the issues that we talk about,
of all
right?
the confusion and chaos?
Yeah. Like, instead of trying to come up with answers and solutions, which is a rational process, what would it feel like,
which is an emotional process?
Yeah. And also, it's a kind of imagination. It's some type of a psychological therapy, right? Like imagining what would it feel like to be in a country that was harmonious,
peaceful,
unified, where the resources were used in a wise way, where we were able to live in harmony with nature and our resources.
Yes.
Like, what would that feel like? And having that in my mind, I think whatever I create would have that feeling. Yeah.
Yeah. Very good. Boy, I'm so excited about this because I'm like, whoo, I haven't gotten this deep with a piece of something for a while here. I've been having too much fun. I'm having fun now. But this is a different kind of fun. This is a fun that your mind, it's a transformative fun. You know, it's fun that's transforming us into a different mindset.
Yeah.
We're programmed in the States. We are.
Yeah.
You know, I was 8 years old when I found out that we didn't come from the United States. We came from Africa. I was in Mrs. Cook's class, still remember that wonderful woman, and she taught us African American history. And the history of Africa and African American history started with Africa. So she told us a story about the villages that we used to live in and how people came and took us away from that and brought us over to the continental U.S. or continental America, because some of us went to South America, some of us went to North America. And so she told that story. And as she was telling that story, I, as an eight-year-old, had pictures in my head of places and spaces that we were coming from. And I was having an experience at 8 years old. I had a lot of experiences. And when she said, we didn't come from this place, I knew instinctively that I would come back home.
Yes.
This is my home.
Can I ask you, what was it you were thinking about before she had painted that picture for you? When you thought about where Black people's home was? Or
for me, I had an awesome accent. I say it was awesome now. Of course, my parents didn't really appreciate when I would put on the patois, because I was coming from living in Jamaica for about 3 years. So at the age of 5 and a half, 6, I would say I was back here in the States, but I had my accent. And I was thinking about that I had come out of a very difficult childhood situation to live with my mom and dad, because my grandmother raised us for 3 years when we were in Jamaica. This is my dad's mom. And she tried, but it wasn't working. And so my mom came and got us. And when I saw her, she was coming from a space of, I didn't realize that that was my mom, because my mom looked beautiful to me. I was programmed even then. My mom was light skin. I was dark. I did not like the way I looked. It was a different story for me. When I saw her, I said, that beautiful woman is my mom. I couldn't believe that. And it took a long while after that to believe that this was my mother. So that was an emotional thing for me at the age of 8 to realize that this place that she brought me to, which was America, Brooklyn, New York at the time, and then later on Queens, this wasn't really my home. Although there were people here that really looked like me, we were all different people. I mean, she worked in a bank. She worked around a lot of white folk, Jews, and they were totally, you know, different culture, Hasidic. My grandmother lived in Crown Heights, which was Brooklyn Hasidic Jews, you know, really Jewish Jews. And so our story, and this is your story as well, our story is a story of different cultures mixing together, because your name says your story, my name says mine. And so when we're thinking about who we are and our identity and where we belong, the place we belong to, that's all a part of our emotional and psychological programming.
I feel like being African American, and having a Ghanaian father, I don't think about myself as white. Okay, and of course, that might seem obvious to anyone listening, but visually,
I get called a Bruni a lot,
right?
But you know, they call me a Bruni, and really, I'm like on a whole nother level of darkness here. You know, this is the color is definitely a color here.
What I'm saying is, I think having the education of the story of Black people moving, you know, to the States and to the Caribbean and to South America, having that understanding broadens your awareness of what it means to be Black.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
So where I come from, there are people who are Black who are as light as sand in color.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
And as dark as night. But here in Ghana, it's like, no. You're like, no. The taxi cab driver will say it. He's like, oh, please stop. Are you sure? Are you sure you're Black? I'm like, yes, I'm telling you I'm Black. He says, no. He said, look at my skin. This is Black. Look at your skin. This is white, right? And I'm wondering if they're joking. But it would mean that you wouldn't have a Pan-Africanist thinking. I mean, if you knew, for instance, that Bob Marley's father was a white man.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yes. And my great-grandfather was white.
Yeah.
Looking at me, you wouldn't think that, but he was.
But you said it. Our story is one of intermixing. Cultures, you know.
All kind of cultures up in that story. And so when you paint, does that intermixing happen for you?
Well, I am a Black man. The question might be, what does Black mean? I mean, I think we're at a place in our history where the idea of what Blackness is has totally exploded beyond any classification,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's no longer something that limits people, but it's as diverse as the universe. When I think about what Blackness is, the potential, you know, so as a Black man, I encompass different cultures and different, you know?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But my genetic expression of Blackness is light-skinned, but I know that my intention of creating art is deeply rooted in wanting to uplift Black people.
Yes, yes. Okay. All right. Listen, this is Africa Global Radio, our story, our growth, our future. This is the Black Our Story podcast. I'll be back in a minute. We're getting deep.
I'm not quite sure I'm at liberty to be telling you all the secrets, and maybe that's why I keep stuttering in this point in time. But the message is clear, we are one.
Africa Global Radio.
Okay, we're back here at Africa Global Radio, our story, our growth, our future. And this is the Black Our Story podcast. Biko, I have really enjoyed the depth of which we've had our conversation. I feel transformed, enlightened. And I want to find out, because, again, we had a workshop with you during the Black Our Story month of the African American Association of Ghana. That was not this last year, but the year before. And you did a therapeutic session with us painting, with us finding our own story within us. And I thought that was amazing. Tell me, what got you to be in this space, doing this with people and helping them find their voice?
In 2011, to give you the story on paper, in 2011, I came to Ghana and I worked with my uncle, who's my art mentor, Kofi Agoso.
Okay.
His work is all over the world. It's also at the Artist Alliance Gallery in Labadie.
Yes.
And he was the one who gave me the foundation in an expressionist style of painting. And I remember very clearly him just giving me some blank canvases, and him, the paint was all there, and the brushes and palette knife. And he knew already from knowing me when I was a teenager that I was an artist. So he just was like, he was like, just do your thing. Just do
be
your
you.
Thing. Yeah. And so I didn't know how to even use a palette knife. I just started using different things and didn't think about it so much. And so I was giving a bit of that experience with the class, this idea that I think the first thing I told everybody was choose a paintbrush that calls you or that you feel. Instead of having different ones and being not sure, okay, I need to use this one for this one, that one for the, no. Just choose one and we'll use that one for the duration
it's
of
like the
class.
Wand chooses you. That's such a the wand chooses you. That's such a Harry Potter thing.
Yeah. Each one has its own technicalities to it. Mm-hmm. You know, thicker brushes do certain things, thinner one, you know, there's different kinds of brushes for different purposes. But for the purpose of expressing yourself, you don't have to get into the details. You just start with something. And so my approach is to share different techniques with you so that you can experiment with different textures and different approaches to create something that's unique. That's organic. Mm. So that by the end, I just want you to be surprised, by your own thing.
Your own creativity, isn't it?
Yeah.
Very good, very good. I'm so happy to have you here. I know that we want to see where your work is. Do you have any of your work displayed anywhere? Or how can we get in touch with you so that we can have a paint and sip with you?
Okay, I'm on Instagram. My name is spelled BikoHaffar, BikoHaffar. So it's instagram.com/BikoHaffar. I also have my website, it's BikoHaffar.com. And on the About Me or About the Artist tab, it has my phone number, my email address there.
Very good, very good. It has been a pleasure.
I'm sitting here.
I can't wait to be a part of your classes again.
There's so much more to talk about even, And whether it's, the way we can, I'm thinking about so much stuff too, because we've kind of hit on a lot of different subjects. But as far as the art therapy goes, it's available for different kinds of groups. Also, if you have a group of children, then we have, classes for kids.
I also know that Autism Awareness Week is coming up, and I wanted to find out, do you work with autistic or differently enabled young people?
I can work with, or I try to work with anyone.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I enjoy working with children. Certainly if there were kids that had, special needs, then, adults or chaperones who knew how to tend to those specific needs ought to be present.
Yeah.
But everyone expresses themselves in their own way. There's no judgment. We're going to take off that critical mind of like what it's supposed to be. And in that way,
that's what expressionism is.
Yeah.
It's definitely the person doing that. There's no right or wrong. It's just that person and what they have to say, what they have to communicate.
Yeah. I think that's important for people who feel nervous about art, or who feel that they're not masters, that they have a space where they can just create and express without judgment or anything.
Very good, very good. I am happy to have you here again at any other time, because I think this is a way to tell our story. Some folks, we don't know our story. So it's important that we have a place and a space and a safe place and space to express ourselves. This is Africa Global Radio, our story, our growth, our future. And I'm Sherry Thompson. I've enjoyed Biko Afar, and we are going to be back again. This is the Black Our Story podcast. See you.
This is an Africa Global Radio production.